Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's the night of the senior prom. The Bates High School gym is alive with excitement. Everybody is there, even Carrie White, the girl no one likes.
We're all sorry about this incident, Cassie.
It's Carrie!
And everyone makes fun of her.
Free Carrie!
The girl who lives in that creepy house with her crazy mother.
See the sin of her days and ways. Show her that if she had remained sinless, the curse of blood would never have come on her.
The girl with the strange power.
If I concentrate hard enough, I can move things.
Welcome to Rewatchability. It's the podcast where we rewatch old movies and see how they hold up this All Hallows Eve.
You're terrifying me, Rob. Stop it.
And we're on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. I'm Robert LaRonde. With me, as always, is...
Blaine Waters.
And today we have a very scary movie to talk about. But before we get to that...
Yeah, let's not get carried away. See what I...
Out.
Damn it.
All Detention right. For you.
No.
Don't get all frustrated and use your psychic powers to make something move.
Okay, I won't.
Before we get into that, we should thank our Patreons. Those are the people who give us a little bit of trick-or-treat every month.
That's nice.
A little bit of candy in our basket.
Yeah. Stop giving us tricks, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
That doesn't help us on the podcast. We look like fools.
And Blaine, stop turning tricks.
That's the only way to get more money, Rob. This podcast.
But you can donate $1, $3, or $5 at patreon.com/rewatchability. And in return, you'll get the podcast early and ad-free.
Yep. Yeah. We have a bonus episode coming up.
We certainly do.
Yep. I'm going to promise that now, Rob, so we have to do it.
Okay.
It's a big one, though. It's one that we've been wanting to do since maybe we started this podcast.
So. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be fun.
But today, we're going to talk about... Carrie, the 1976 movie directed by Brian De Palma from the novel by Stephen King, Frightmaster Stephen King.
This was his first book, right?
Yeah.
It was his first novel. When he was a teacher, he was like writing at nights.
I also heard that he was writing it while working at an industrial laundry.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So some of the characters were based off people that he worked with at the laundromat.
I feel like it would have made more sense if he was working at a high school, you know, teaching, doing this stuff.
Well, I think he probably did that too. But you know what? They don't fucking pay teachers shit. That's why they're so angry and they read all these, like, books where people kill other people and they have these psychic powers and, you know, everybody at the school dies.
Yeah. It's a good recommendation for living in the States, Canada too. We don't pay our teachers enough. But it's like that Walter White thing, you know? If he had health care, then he wouldn't have had to sell meth. But the creativity that it took, he really shined, you know?
That's right.
And so Stephen King
He's
really
the Stephen
shined.
Stephen King of meth. Stephen King's the Walter White of writing books.
There you go. I like that. Yeah. He's in the Empire business.
So, Blaine, when was the first time that you saw Carrie?
I have never seen Carrie, Rob.
Oh, my God.
I still didn't watch it.
What?
Because fuck this podcast. No, I watched it. Okay. I would be so mad.
I would psychic some shit right at you.
No, man. Oh, it's getting hot in here. Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I had never seen it before, but I...
What? Why not? You love Stephen King. You've read all of his books. Have you read the book, Carrie?
I have not read the book, Carrie.
Blaine!
I know.
Come on. All of your Stephen King credentials are out the window.
They are out the window. I did read his, like, actual first book, though, which was The Gunslinger. He wrote that in, like, university or started writing it in university.
Right. Yeah, he went back and fixed a bunch of shit.
Yeah, he became Richard Bachman and started, you know, editing himself.
Right.
But, yeah, I had never read this, but I kind of knew the gist of it. And it was like Firestarter or, you know.
It's not like Firestarter.
One of those other ones that he wrote. They're all the same. You know, you have a person persecuted, and then they set shit on fire. They start fire. I thought Carrie was Firestarter. I did. This is what I'm admitting right now.
Okay.
But the psychic power thing is...
It's a bit of a trope.
It's strong in the Stephen King universe.
Right.
And he does have a universe.
There's some psychic powers in The Shining.
Yep. Well, and the universe, the Gunslinger, that whole septilogy...
Gunslinger.
Yeah. It kind of ties all his books together.
So, I didn't finish that.
You didn't
series.
Finish the no?
No, oh, I read the last first book. Couple, and you know they were good, but I don't know. There was the movie. The movie was good, though, right?
The movie is like a hot piece of garbage. I can't wait for someday for us to talk about the movie, but it is just what a movie.
But this was the first Stephen King adaptation.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing.
Okay,
his first book, but I should say you should finish that series, because the last book, Stephen King isn't known for his endings.
Right.
I think endings really elude him as a writer.
Uh-huh.
He really can't get it right. But in the seventh book of that series, he just nails it.
He gets it right.
He nails it.
Okay, well, I challenge you. You should read Carrie, because he ends it.
Okay. Okay.
It doesn't take him 30 years. His entire career is now the albatross around his neck. Which, you know, purportedly connects everything, you know, badly.
Yeah. But, it's a big wingspan.
Is Carrie in the Dark Tower universe?
So.
No?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, have you seen this movie before?
Of course I have, Blade.
When did you first see it?
Well, I think I saw it in high school. At the time, I was dating somebody, and she had really liked Carrie.
Right.
So
she was like, go to the prom with me, Rob. Watch this movie. Like, I gotta watch the movie.
We did go to the prom together.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, she fucked everything up. I mean, she was provoked. I can sort of see some similarities, though, between that person, who was lovely in a lot of respects, and Carrie. Like, there was some, like, simmering anger.
Oh, my God. You are gonna go home to your house on fire after this podcast once it airs.
I wouldn't be surprised. But I saw this movie and I remember enjoying it. It sort of fell in line with the sort of Stephen King movies that I enjoyed, like The Shining, mm-hmm. and I think even it. Like, it has a sort of like 70s feel. It's more cinematic because it hadn't sort of embraced the cult of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Like, Stephen King was nobody when they made this movie. In fact, this movie sort of made Stephen King in a way what he is or what he would become.
Right.
But there was no big author hanging over Brian De Palma's head.
Right. Stephen King wasn't phoning him in the middle of the night to be like, hey, you stop fucking up The Shining.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a little bit of behind the scenes right now. He was only paid $2,500 for the rights to this movie.
That's bullshit.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is only 2,500 times what he charges student filmmakers one of his things.
Yeah, and so I assume he's still a poor, impoverished author.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, they're never appreciated in their own time.
For sure.
But I liked it, and I also loved certain aspects of it, like young John Travolta.
Yeah.
Come on, that's fun.
Yeah.
And you get to see him bite it, which is great.
Well, after slapping everyone around for hours.
Yeah.
Everyone's slapping each other in this fucking movie. It's just like it's abuse the movie is what it should be called.
Yeah.
Did you – ow. God damn it, Rob. I'm sorry.
Don't bring that up again.
I'll come to my senses. I'll come to my senses.
Sorry. That was –
Yeah. We.
That was harsh.
God, this is
– And poor radio Foley skills.
I think we just blew out everyone's eardrums. were you kind of afraid to go to the prom with this individual one after this movie?
No. It was a nice experience, and it wasn't my prom. It was her prom. We skipped my prom because I was a year younger than her, and we went to her prom, and then by my prom we were over it, and everyone died.
And it seems like you're over that, too. Just very coolly bringing
like
it up.
They were mean.
Well, it was your prom at your high school?
No, it was at this, like, you know, there was, like, this community center / events place / the radio station was there as well.
Oh, my God. Was it Stephen King's radio station?
It was Stephen. Does he have a radio station?
Yeah, he does in Maine.
Really?
Yeah. He, like, runs a radio station.
Wow. I bet it's just like all like 50s rock and roll and allusions to murder.
It just plays Welcome to Night Vale over and over and over again. that's it. I went to prom too, but it was on a boat. So
that is bullshit.
If it had,
did you go to Breaker High?
If it had caught fire, it would have been put out very easily. Just would have sank.
Why?
Why was it on a boat?
Yeah.
Because I think the committee wanted to do something different than the high school thing.
It was a really bad choice to do that and the Under the Sea theme because that boat sank.
I do remember my friend, she made a duct tape dress, and then she made a duct tape suit for her date.
Right.
But since it was on the water, it was just – they slid off everything because the dew was everywhere. So if they sat down, they just slide right off.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, that was kind of – it was like slip and slide for them.
Well, let's get into Carrie.
Yeah, what happens in this crazy movie?
Are you ready? Because it gets pretty graphic pretty early.
So, it does. Oh, my God. It's like Revenge of the Nerds, like, right away.
Yeah, that's right. Well, did you – I mean, I guess you didn't because you didn't do any research, as usual. But did you read that Piper Laurie –
off research, you son of a bitch. Go on. What?
Did you read that Piper Laurie thought that this was a comedy?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I mean, it certainly kind of begins that way.
It kind of does. But so it starts with Carrie. She is a high school student.
Right.
And she's
like the Dawson's Creek of high school students. She looks like 23.
Oh, yes.
24. All the students look very old.
She was actually 26.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's right. The woman who plays the teacher was the ripe old age of 28.
2 years older?
Yeah.
That must have sucked. She must have gone home after that audition. I got it. Oh, God, I got it. Son of a bitch. Yeah.
But she is not well-liked by the other girls in her class. They sort of make fun of her. And she's very shy and withdrawn. And she has trouble at school, like when they're playing games. She's not very athletic.
Nah. I mean, she's playing volleyball. Fuck volleyball. Have you played volleyball?
Volleyball is fucking awesome, Blaine.
What?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I thought that you would hate it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in an extracurricular volleyball team in grad school. Our team was called Comedy of Errors.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. I murdered them all with my psychic powers.
You had to. Yeah, dude, just to come out on top. Yeah, she's not great at volleyball.
No. Her classmates do not like her. They all make fun of her.
Yeah.
But even worse is that when she is in the shower after the game, she gets her period.
Yeah.
And it is not a very nurturing experience for her.
God, no. No. First of all, that shower is fucked up because she's covered in water but yet has a handful of blood and emerges from the shower just fine with a handful of blood. Second of all, that's
a heavy flow.
It's yes, not on the tap, but on – and she runs out and she kind of does the whole – what's his fucking name? He played Joker, like sending the – horrible used tampons to people.
Oh, Jared Leto.
Jared Leto, yeah.
You're going to have to specify which Joker. Just say the bad one.
I did. I said the horrible Joker. So she like goes out with this handful of blood and like kind of paints the first person she sees, a sweater. But that person laughing their ass off. The weirdest reaction to like being like put blood upon I've ever seen. But everyone's laughing.
You
looked
like you were about to throw up there.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
But the everyone is laughing at her. And everyone starts throwing tampons and pads at her.
Yeah, and saying, like, plug her up. It's pretty awful. But
yeah.
We find out later, you know, when the teachers are talking, that her mother never told her that she should be expecting to
right.
have her period.
Yeah.
And so she was just sort of surprised by it and thought she was going to die.
It's so cruel. It's just so cruel. You feel for her so much right at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah.
It's so well done. And
that's why sex ed is important. They should have been teaching her that shit at school. There's a real failure of the teachers. Right?
Well, I'd say it was Doug – I mean the government. maybe the government. But my teacher in grade 8, who is teaching us all sex at grade 7, she told us this horrible story. Because when I saw this, I was like, who wouldn't have told poor Carrie that she was going to have a period?
Right.
But my teacher in grade 7 also was not told that she was going to have a period.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally believe that a lot of people are ignorant of their basic bodily functions because of, you know,
like horrible, like just
weird Christian bullshit.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is.
My teacher said that she like ran away from home because she thought she was dying. Isn't that like the most horrifying thing? So like I feel for Carrie. I felt for my teacher at the time.
I mean, yeah, you definitely feel very much for the character. And it's like not handled very decently. I mean,
yeah.
Brian De Palma, he definitely, I think, enjoys inflicting a little bit of like cruelty on the actress.
Oh, I think he enjoys a little bit more about the actress
right.
than just inflicting cruelty on her.
Right. There's definitely a bit of a male gaze-y thing. Like the shower scene, we're just seeing
movie.
All of these. I mean, they're supposed to be like high school girls, but they're
yes.
all in their mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, thanks
Some
God.
Some of them have had children.
But like it's kind of weird to see that this is like a high school movie, but we're also like watching these naked girls that are supposed to be high. It's
right.
this weird disconnect and dissonance
right.
that was off-putting. And maybe that's part of the horror, but I think it was the 70s, so I don't think it was part of the horror yet.
For sure. There's also like a weird scene where the girls are just like doing exercises and they're like, you know,
short shorts.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, this is weird and voyeuristic.
Yeah, it could have been a one-second scene. It was a five-minute scene.
But
it was a long scene.
Yeah. I mean, some of it, like, I kind of like. Some of it, I kind of, you know, I feel bad. Like,
yeah.
you know, I think I like the realism of, like, the shower scene. And I think they did shoot a scene with a whole bunch of towels as well that were, like, strategically placed for the television version.
Right.
But this version is, like, there's more bush at this than at Ellen's dinner party. And I'm talking about President George W. Bush.
I love how you had to explain the joke.
It was a double entendre.
God damn it, Rob.
I'm sorry.
No, you shouldn't. I mean, you should.
I'm not sorry to Ellen because she associates with war criminals.
I do kind of get it because it is showing us that all of these girls are comfortable with their bodies and all these girls
yeah.
like, are like, you know, societally caught up, whereas Sissy Spacek is – or Carrie is just very uncomfortable with who she is, and the only time that she can kind of enjoy her own body is like in the privacy of the steam of this shower.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
that's kind of sad.
But the girls, the mean girls, they get in trouble for being fucking awful to
yeah.
Carrie. And they like, you know, the gym teacher gives them like a real dressing down, and she threatens them and says,
not a Brian De Palma dressing down, we
right.
should say.
Pardon
this.
Me.
Okay.
Yes. So this, I did read on IMDb that the actress said that she was playing the gym teacher like a lesbian.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very short-sighted view of what a lesbian is, but, you know.
But she's really mean to them. Like, she even, like, bullies them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The period's not up, Hargensen.
It is for me.
Keep running! Well, there are 10 minutes left. Stick them up your... You can't for this, you bitch!
What?
I'm
working!
I'm gonna knock you down, do you understand me? She can't get away with this if we all stick together, nor
Shut up, Chris. Just shut up.
Yeah, I mean, she slaps. So the meanest girl of them all, who is dating around, going to prom.
Right.
She will be the one to get the biggest revenge on Carrie later.
Right.
She gets slapped around in probably every scene in this movie.
Right. That's right. By the gym teacher, by John Travolta.
Yeah. And like John Travolta many times, the gym teacher twice, I think. Like,
save the pig's blood for them.
It's like, holy shit, man. Yeah. Everyone's hitting each other.
And you recognize that actress?
I do.
But you don't know from where.
No.
RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's, what's her, you know, the partner.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. After, you know, all of this, presumably she crawled out of the rubble and went down the straight and narrow path. Or, wait, no, decided that she wanted more violence and vengeance and became a cop.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a bunch of cool cameos in this movie, which we'll get to later on.
Will
but
we?
Yeah, well, I'm sure. No. In the okay,
yeah, but they start planning their revenge on Carrie, and like we see all of it sort of happen, and like it's not just from Carrie's perspective. Like, in fact, we're sort of like I don't think we're like meant to identify with Carrie so much as like you know, sympathize with her from a distance.
It's a weird movie because Carrie is a titular character. Carrie is what like everything interesting is happening.
It's
to Carrie.
It's called Carrie.
Yeah, for a reason. But yet there's this, and we first see Carrie.
Half the movie is teenage girls working out.
and like we see Carrie first off, like she's her first point of entry. So it's weird that we kind of are introduced to almost the villain of the piece and then made to understand her so much.
Right.
But this side character kind of becomes the main character on the way through this movie. Mm-hmm. She gets her boyfriend to ask out Carrie to the prom.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Tommy Ross, I think his name is. He's the dude with like the big curly blonde Robert Plant hair.
Right. Yeah. Laughing at everything all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he, you know, he first approaches Carrie. Mm-hmm. I think it's in the library, and he asks her out, and she runs away.
I mean, yeah. Look at those curls.
She says, you know, when the teacher comes and talks to her about it, she says, yeah, I'm sure it's because they're fucking with me.
Right.
And the teacher is like, no, I'm sure they're not fucking with you.
I love the teacher says, no, no, they're not fucking with you. And then the next scene is like, why are you guys fucking with her?
Yeah.
They just tell it true to Carrie. You know, she's delicate, but I'm sure she can take it.
Yeah. But yeah, the guy insists and like goes to her house. Yeah. And, you know, she basically says yes, mostly, I think, so that her mom doesn't come and see who she's talking to at the door.
Yeah, and her mom is a pretty big religious person.
Mm-hmm. No. You can say it. Nut.
I mean, she makes even the most extreme religions seem tame at some point.
Well,
she is very aggressive with Carrie, abusive.
I mean, when she gets a phone call from the teacher about Carrie getting her period, and she says, you're a woman now. And then hits her with a giant book in the face. Which,
yeah, you know, Carrie picks it up off the ground. What's happened to my body book for girls? This is useful.
You're a woman now.
Why didn't you tell me, Mama?
And God made Eve from the rib of Adam. And Eve was weak and loosed the raven on the world. And the raven was called sin. Said, the raven
Why
was called sin.
Why didn't you tell me, Mama?
Said,
no.
The raven was called sin.
Ooh, woman. And the raven was called sin.
And first sin was intercourse. First sin was intercourse.
I didn't sin, Mama.
Yeah, no, she literally throws the Bible at her. It's awful. And then locks her in a fucking cupboard with Jesus.
Yeah, well, I mean, she says that, like, oh, you wouldn't have gotten your period if you hadn't have committed the sin of intercourse.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that really brings it on. Jesus Christ. It's like, it's the worst backwards thinking, and we understand why Carrie can get so upset because her mom is, I mean, abusing her, beating her, and neglecting her, and psychological abuse. She's doing all three, the triumvirate. And so we're – I don't know. At this point, I'm really, really hoping that this guy is nice to Carrie. Just please be fucking nice to Carrie.
Right, yeah.
You know, just like show her that not everyone in this world is evil or lying to her. Like, because even the teacher is fucking lying to her, being nice to her but lying to her.
Yeah.
You know, like no one is good to her.
Yeah, she's sort of not a great teacher.
Yeah.
But she sort of gets hers in the end as well. But, I mean – the prom is coming up and Tommy has asked her to go to prom and she's told her mom. And this is where she started to sort of get her mojo.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like stood up to her mom and said, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm making my dress.
Yeah, she makes her own dress. That's
yeah,
really nice.
It's great. And she looks amazing.
Yeah, she does.
I mean, like, you know, costuming can do stuff in movies, apparently.
It's literally the plot to She's All That is happening in this movie.
But I also like – I like when she goes to the prom, everybody else looks so like backwards and like – not like – they look so old-fashioned, you know?
Well, everyone rented their suits and dresses, right? So like Carrie made her own and it's more fashion-forward, I think.
That's true. I forgot that we get that like the big scene of the three dudes that we don't really care about.
Yeah, I don't even know what that tuxedos. Scene was. I don't even know what that – like they're just standing there and they're like, ah, oh, what do you want? And then the it speeds up at one point.
Yeah.
And like the film speeds up. So now we're at like 120 frames a second to like go through their conversation and back out and it cuts. And it's very like I'm going to fuck with this scene as much as possible because it doesn't matter. And then I'm going to put it in the movie and it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Let's get on with this movie. There was no reason for it at all.
Well, I sort of get the sense that Brian De Palma was trying to sort of give like more of the life of the students. Stephen King calls it like the high school confidential treatment.
Right.
And like that's sort of fun, but it doesn't really gel with the whole horrifying telekinetic killer thing.
Yeah. And it didn't feel
– the blood.
It didn't feel really true to the rest of the high school. Like, it felt like this kind of orphan in the middle of this movie, that scene.
Yeah, and we also see, like, all the stuff happening where they're planning getting back at Carrie.
Yeah.
It's, like, not any sort of, like, secret that she is going to get something bad happening to her at the prom.
And so the one girl, she, like, talks John Travolta into it, and she doesn't talk him into it. She does other things to him into it.
Right. Yeah, they're at the like the lover's lane or whatever, and she she goes down on him while somehow perfectly also articulating his name.
She spells out – she's going down on him and she's like, I hate that girl Carrie. And I'm like, you have two mouths? I don't know what's going on. I'm unsure that Brian Palmas ever had a blowjob. Or he definitely hasn't given one if this is what he thinks is going on. I was laughing because it was kind of like while they're doing this thing, she's talking about this other girl and how much she hates her. And I thought that was kind of funny.
But they also go to the farm and kill the pig. And John Travolta like smashes this pig's brains out with a hammer.
Yeah. And the girl is just fucking loving it.
Yeah.
Like, do it. Get her done. Get her done.
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
But it's really well done. Brian De Palma films it really well. And the cutting back and forth between like the hit and her screaming and the hit and her screaming.
Yeah.
Really great.
But it feels like very like authentic too. Like I feel like this is like the real sort of mob mentality high schoolers can get themselves into.
Yeah.
Where they're suddenly doing like terrible, evil things and laughing about it.
Do you want to tell us something, Rob? You want to confess?
Do you like pork chops?
Pork chop sandwiches. I'm a vegetarian, Rob. So yeah, I'm boring that way. No, I love the scene and the fact that John Travolta like takes over and like fucking bashes this. And they go to the prom and they start
like, how can you watch Grease the same way again?
This grease is rendered from pig fat. Just slicks it into his hair. So they set up the prom. They get the one guy who couldn't kill the pig to, like, collect the ballots of who's going to be prom king and queen.
Right. Yeah, I love that guy's character, like the good old boy.
Yeah, for sure.
sort of asshole.
His whole speech to the prom committee guy is of being like, let me do something. He's like, you should have been here 4 days ago. The prom's almost here. And he's like, well, I'll collect the ballots or something. He's like, okay, well, be here at 6. He's like, I'll be here at 8. 8 works better for me. Like, he's just never – he's just always getting what he wants. It's great. It's
yeah.
Great scene.
Yeah. But then the prom comes.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carrie goes. She gets picked up. She has a nice time with the dude. They're talking at a table.
Yeah.
For most of it.
And he's being really nice to her. And this feels good. And I'm like – is he in on it? I don't know.
I think the movie is trying to play with this a bit because it is played rather ambiguous. And you assume, like, yeah, they're doing this as part of the plan,
yeah,
right?
To
like,
get why her else? On stage.
If it's not part of the plan, then why would the bad guys have this plan? Because why else would she be at prom?
But then we find out later that it is not part of the girl and her boyfriend who's now going to prom with Carrie. It's not part of their plan because they win prom king and queen. They go up on stage and that girl's backstage. She sees a string attached to the pail of pig's blood and she's like freaking out. She's like, oh, shit. And then she goes and she like looks under the stage and that's where the people are and she's trying to tell the teacher something's happening.
It's very slow motion.
Everything is slow motion. It takes like 8 minutes to happen and I loved every second of it.
It was pretty good, but I'm still a little bit incredulous at this whole character being there. Like, what person volunteers or coerces her boyfriend to take another girl to the prom?
Well, she says she's doing it because Carrie is not part of any group and she will never have a prom unless she does this. And she says that to the
teacher.
Find
another guy. There's like 100 other dudes at this high school who would gladly take her to the prom. You go to the AV club. You're like, Ned, put aside that projector for a second.
Right. Find yourself a Seymour is what you're saying.
Find yourself a Seymour.
Suddenly Seymour.
That could be a song for the reboot.
Right, the Carrie
Find
musical.
Find yourself a Seymour. Well, we'll talk about the Carrie musical.
Okay.
But, I mean, it just seems – it doesn't make any sense to me. But then also, she's – this girl, Sue, is having dinner with her family, you know – as you do in the 70s, and then she gets up to leave, and she goes to the prom to watch? To watch what? To watch her boyfriend become the prom king with somebody else? Does she know this is going to happen? What does she expect to be seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I were to defend her, it would be because she saw Carrie get bullied so often, and she was a part of that bullying, and then the gym teacher's recriminations actually worked. Like, it worked on her. And because she says to the other girl, just do it. Like, this is our punishment. We did something bad. Like, stop trying to get out of this. Like, let's just do our punishment.
So she feels sorry for her behavior.
I think she might feel sorry for laughing at Carrie when she got her period.
I still find it weird. And people were mean to me, but nobody made their boyfriend go to prom with me.
I'll speak to him, okay? But I just think that this is maybe one of the genuine bits of this movie.
Hmm.
And if it is, then it's even sadder at the end. And hopefully it is.
Right. Well, yeah, she does see the thing happening and tries to stop it, but the teacher stops her. And then, the famous Carrie gets covered with blood.
Yeah.
And
this Adam Sandler sequence that I only know from the Adam Sandler CD that I had when I was a kid.
Wait, what?
They're All Gonna Laugh at You.
Oh,
I had never seen it in Carrie, but I remember I was just like, oh, this is from Carrie.
Right.
Of course. Like, of course it's from a
that's
movie.
Where it originates from. Yeah. Piper Laurie, of course.
Yeah, They're All Gonna Laugh at You. They're All Gonna Laugh at You. And just kind of dances around that kaleidoscopic thing happening.
Sorry, Cassie. We're all sorry, Cassie.
Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me. Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me. Trust me, Carrie. You can trust me.
yeah, Lisa needs braces, and it's all happening around her head. And then she fucking shuts the doors, and the hose comes out. It gets the hose again.
Yeah.
And she, yeah, just fire hoses
it's
everyone.
It's mayhem. Yeah. Everything turns red.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's mostly the fire hose.
It's weird. Yeah, the fire hose is kind of like this Beetlegeistian thing happening.
Yeah, and then, like, it gets some of the lights wet and mm-hmm. the equipment and, like, the professor yeah. and the teacher who was also in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest dies.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to have one person from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for every Stephen King movie.
Right, for sure.
It's the law.
Yeah. How else are you going to get out of rooms? You got to throw some things through windows, you know? And they should have done that because fucking John Travolta and his psycho girlfriend are looking on as everyone burns to death through the window.
Mm-hmm.
Open it. Pull some people out.
Well, they're bad people.
God damn. And the teacher bites it too.
Yeah.
She gets the basketball net through the sternum.
Yeah.
It falls right through, and that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's trying to get, like, help for the other kid that took care of the prom, and now he's dying.
Yeah, well, he dies from the
pale.
Death by pale.
It was a pale rider on a pale horse.
Which is, like, the most embarrassing death. I have to admit that watching this scene, I found some of the mayhem not too murderous.
Yeah.
Like, the water hose, I'm like, would it kill somebody? How many PSIs does it take to kill a prom queen?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was one girl that got knocked back into a table, and then she just passes out. I was like, would you? Like, I don't know. You didn't hit your head or anything. You're fine.
Yeah.
It was weird. There was some weird stuff there, but I'm sure it was a hectic thing to even film. And holy shit, Sissy Spacek standing in front of, like, all that fire drenched in blood.
Oh,
like, one
yeah.
image.
Yeah.
And practical effects, like, that's crazy.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she runs home after everybody is dead. And on the way there, John Travolta and the other woman try to run her down in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
But she uses her psychic powers to make the car swerve and then flips it and then just makes it fucking explode. And I'm like, yes, burn, Travolta, burn.
He's got a fever, Saturday night fever. The newest movie, I remember the trailer of, like, her crashing a school bus. Like, it was way more mayhem for – she goes throughout the town.
Oh,
like,
you're talking about the 2013 remake.
Yeah, yeah. With okay. Chloe Grace Moretz or
yeah.
whatever her name is.
We'll get into that.
And it just – yeah, I mean, it seemed like a Hollywood remake of a Hollywood movie from the 70s because it was just so much more mayhem. Like,
right.
This was enough. Like, this was the slow-moving horror of these kids realizing they were trapped in a burning building. Like, that's horrific. And it's stuck there for a long time.
It's pretty horrific.
Yeah. We don't need much more.
Yeah.
But we get it because her mom is still alive.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. We need to see that. She comes home and, you know, her mom has put out all the candles.
I know. Her mom's like, I was going to have some me time, but I thought you were going to be at prom later.
I assumed you'd be making out with that boy.
Yeah.
But this is also, I mean, she tells, like, the whole story about, like, how her father raped her mother and
yeah.
that was how, you know, Carrie was conceived. And she also, like, I'm sad for her character, too, even though she's a monster, the mom.
Yeah.
Like, she, you know, is been indoctrinated with
yes.
all this, like,
yeah.
religious
she's
stuff.
In, like,
and
a cult, yeah.
Yeah, but she feels that she has to kill the witch,
yeah.
which is her daughter. And so while she's stabbed Carrie in the back with, like, a knife,
mm-hmm.
and then she, like, comes after her and, you know, Carrie uses her powers to pin her mom to the wall.
Yeah, like
in
a cushion.
In a very Christ-like manner,
yes, yeah.
Brian De Palma.
Well, Carrie's already been stabbed in the ribs, which is also the Christ-like thing.
For sure.
Yeah.
And she dies, like, standing up and, you know, with just her head rolled to the side.
And what do you think of that direction right at the end given to the actress to make it seem like she was having an orgasm while she died? Like, what was that? she was enjoying being punctured in so many ways. Like, it just seemed very...
Well, that also goes in line with, like, what she was saying when she told Carrie that she was raped, is that she was like, oh, and I enjoyed it.
Right.
Right? And, like, yeah, but Brian De Palma is a little bit icky with the female sexuality.
Yeah.
And, like, there's also, you know, the connection between sex and sin goes back as well to when Carrie gets her period because, you know, the mom says, like, oh, even if you didn't have intercourse, you had intercourse of the mind. And, I mean, I think she is sort of like being somewhat like semi-erotic in the shower.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It happens. So, like, he's...
Well, she's learned her body.
He's putting this stuff in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm uncomfortable with it. I also think that it's very...
It's uncomfortable material.
It's uncomfortable material, but I also think that it's, like, one of those things that I don't know... I don't know whether it's because it's a male director directing it that I hear I got raped and enjoyed it and I go, well, fuck that.
Right.
Like, that doesn't feel true or real because I know that it's like three men involved in making this movie from the book to the screenplay to the director.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there was a female director and that still happened, whether I'd be more okay with it. Or whether it would have even happened with a female director. Like, that's what – it's kind of like up in the air if I am being, I guess, what, chauvinist or sexist against Brian De Palma for – I don't know. But like –
Well,
a lot of people think
that Brian De Palma is in fact a misogynist.
Yeah.
And he's definitely had to answer for those accusations in the past. I don't know. I mean, I think that the movie, you know, it tries to say things in a very stark way. And it gives, like, what is horror from a female perspective, you know, when you're a teenage girl? I mean, you're changing body and not having enough information about it is certainly a horrifying thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for every kid going through that. And I do get the violence mixed with sex thing going on.
I bet you do.
I'm a Cenobite, Rob, from Hellraiser. No, I get that's kind of what the theme of this movie is based on. And so
it still tries to titillate, though. Like, it tries to be an artistic movie that, you know, connects sex with this larger theme and also, you know, has a bunch of, you know, girls working out in their short shorts.
And I think that's where it kind of, for me, doesn't work is because it tries to have its cake and eat it too. It's like, look at this connection. Look at how fucked up sex is. Also, let's, like, enjoy ourselves too. It's like, okay, well, I mean, those are kind of polar opposite themes that you're going for there.
Right. And it doesn't, like, use, like, sex as an empowering thing, like, you know.
No.
Many people would use it.
Sure. And but, like, this movie is about sex being a shameful thing. And so
a reaction to that anyway.
Yeah, a reaction to that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and that's Carrie.
And then Carrie fucking dies in her own house.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about that. Yeah, she pulls down the house on her and goes to her weird Jesus closet.
Yeah.
And with her weird glowing eyes, Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Which is fucking creepy.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think that's necessary.
But then we get the main character at the end, kind of main character, I guess, who's the only survivor of this and who is terrified and traumatized of Carrie's whole deal.
Yeah, that's right. She goes to the grave or where the house was and she has a dream with the hand, you know,
the bloody hand. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that scene too because the mom's talking on the phone. She's like, oh, the doctor said that she'll forget it because she's young. The trauma won't do anything to her. And then cut scene to her waking up being like, ah, like totally traumatized. It's like, I think you have some work to do, Mom. I think you have some work to do.
Yeah.
So, yes, that is Carrie.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we have – I have.
All right. Own it. Fine.
Carrie has some behind-the-scenes and trivia after this break.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Phone home.
I knew you were going to do it.
Sorry, I'm trying to get Siri to phone home.
Yeah, you got to say, Siri, hey Siri. Nah, it's not going to work. You don't have Siri activated on your phone?
No, I don't.
I was going to tell Siri to look up E.T. because that's what we're doing next week.
Oh my God, that's such a big movie. Why are we talking about a movie which is so huge?
Because this is big to us on Rewatchability. We discovered extraterrestrial life.
That's right. It was us. It was the guy from Blink-182.
Yeah, Tom DeLonge. Thank you so much, man. It was, it's our 400th episode.
Wow.
400. We turned 400, Rob.
That's amazing. Holy shit. Wait, sorry, I'm processing that.
I know. It's insane. We've been doing this for a long time, since 2011. So this is more than 8 years we've been doing this podcast.
And we haven't talked about E.T.?
And we haven't talked about E.T.
Are you sure?
I am uncertain now that you've really pressed me on it. No, I'm sure. We haven't done it. I can't wait to talk about this. I can't wait to talk about some of the flaws in it, too. It's not a perfect movie, Rob. Oh, no movie's perfect. Okay. We're going to dissect it like they wanted to dissect E.T.
Oh, no.
So grab your walkie-talkies or your guns, whichever one you want, and strap in because we're going to talk about E.T. next week.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. It is Halloween.
Ooh.
And we're talking about Carrie.
Do you carry?
Do you cash and carry?
Well, I hope you do, because we have trivia, don't we?
We do have trivia.
Okay.
And Blaine, I have some great questions, so I hope that you have psychic powers.
I don't read
minds.
You know, I know you do a bit of research on the movies that I do the trivia on. You know, I don't do any research. I'm going as totally blind.
Well.
It's the blind leading the blind here. What do you got for me?
Okay, Blaine, this one's a lowball for you.
Okay.
Name two references to film director Alfred Hitchcock within this film.
Oh, God. I mean, that's going to be the knife in the air.
No, fuck off.
Yeah, there's
knives in the
air.
You can't just say knives in the air. Hitchcock doesn't have a trademark on knives in the air.
She brings up the knife.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, the blood in the shower has to be one.
I'm looking for something more specific.
Oh, my God.
We all bleed in the shower.
Oh, my God. What, you shave in the shower? Is that what you do?
I do.
That's the only way to not, like, get a whole bunch of, like, those red marks. I hate
that.
Yeah. I just don't shave down. Fuck shaving.
No.
I'm going to say knife in the air doesn't count. Okay.
Do you give up?
Yeah, I give up. Just tell me.
You fool. Bring on the pig's blood. No. So the two that I was thinking of, and there's probably a whole bunch more because De Palma.
I mean, I just gave you two. Go on.
Those don't count. But the two are the sound cue of the violin strings.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a distinct reference.
I mean, I could have even, but there's violin strings in every movie, Rob.
Not like that.
Oh, my God. Okay, what's the other one?
The other one is that a bunch of stuff in this town is called Bates, like Bates Motel. So, like, when they go and kill the pig, they go to Bates Farms.
Mmm.
Yeah.
All right. A little Batesy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's the master.
Badger. All right. That's good. All right. Yeah.
Okay, so this movie actually held joint auditions with another hit film. What movie did it audition people with?
Oh, 1976. I don't know. American Graffiti or something?
No.
I don't know.
Blaine.
What?
It's ironic because you're close in a way, in being that the director of this movie did direct American Graffiti.
Oh, is it?
It's Star Wars.
Star Wars? Wow,
yeah.
Shit.
Star Wars. So there was a bunch of, they held joint auditions for Star Wars and for Carrie. And so, in fact, the person who plays Tommy was up for Luke Skywalker.
Oh, my God. His whole life could have changed.
Whole life could have changed. And Nancy Allen, or what's – I think that's her name, the meanest girl.
Yeah.
It was up for the role of Princess Leia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And there were also rumors that Carrie Fisher had been up for the part of Carrie.
Oh. Yeah.
But the rumor at the time was that she balked because of all of the nude scenes.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like like later years Carrie Fisher to balk at nude scenes.
No, she in fact said that she loved being nude and would have been nude on screen enthusiastically.
Oh, man. Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, but I don't think that they actually considered her. But yeah, I mean, I found
That's fascinating. That's great.
Yeah.
John Travolta could have been Chewbacca. That's what I'm getting out of this.
It's a worst timeline. Okay, so this one's a good one.
Okay.
Which cast member of Carrie dated a president of the United States of America?
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to say the mom.
Piper Laurie?
Yeah.
You would be correct.
Yes.
She, in fact, dated Ronald Reagan.
I was going to guess Lincoln. But that's cool.
Wow.
No. She did Ronald Reagan. They're both actors. That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And she's great in this movie. She was actually nominated for the Academy Award for her role as the mom.
Yeah.
And it's a good performance. And, of course, she would later show up in Twin Peaks as Catherine Martell. And sometimes she would show up as an old Japanese man in that show for some reason.
Oh, God. Yeah. They should have done joint casting for that, too. Yeah, they really – whew.
Yeah. Okay, so I have another question for you.
Okay.
This one's a biggie. This one's important.
Well, I answered the first two really well, so.
So relationships is one of the themes in Carrie.
Barely. I guess, yeah.
Shut up. But how many directors met their wives on this film?
How many directors met their wives in this film?
Yes.
Oh, my God. The fact that it's – I mean, the system needed to change. That it was all male directors meeting young women on this film. I'm going to say three.
Wow. Well, you are incorrect. It was only two. So Brian De Palma ended up marrying the woman who plays the meanest girl. But also – it just so happened that somebody told Steven Spielberg that there were all these hot young actresses hanging around the Carrie set. And so Steven Spielberg strolled on down and apparently
– dun, 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 dun. Just showing up.
Apparently he asked out every single female cast member.
Oh, my God.
Including PJ Souls, who is the one in the baseball hat.
Oh, yeah.
She would later go on to be in that Rock and Roll High School movie.
Cool.
They all turned him down. Except for Amy Irving, who plays Sue, the sort of the friend at the end.
Okay.
She said yes, and they ended up getting married.
Very charitable.
Amy Irving. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It takes a big person to not be hurt by being somebody's eighth choice.
Yeah, well, she was willing to give up her boyfriend to Carrie anyway. So,
that's true.
You know?
She doesn't get too attached.
No, she's good. She knows. She's fine. She has self-confidence. She's better than any other type. That's great. That's
It's not great.
But that's a cool little tidbit of information.
I guess so. But it is kind of disappointing that, you know, this movie was just like a pecking ground for, you know, young Hollywood.
It always makes me feel weird when directors start dating the cast.
Yeah.
It just feels like...
Or actresses in general.
Yeah.
sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, then again, you know, this is the world that they're in, and you meet people, and you work with them, and chemistry develops.
Yeah, but it's also...
Have you had any on-screen romances?
No.
No?
No, I once wrote something with a girlfriend of mine, but that was
shit.
It. He ain't wrong. No, I've never developed not
a stage crush.
Not on,
no,
no.
Okay.
No, I mean as an
you say
actor,
no a lot.
Yeah, because I did. but as an actor, yes, like working with someone same age as me. But I find it weird when directors go for someone younger, and also there's a power dynamic there, which
it's
is
true.
Like. The director needs to trust
decisions.
Them. They are their boss. Like, those are the things that I'm like, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Two people dating each other on set, that's fine. I mean, it's probably a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But it's totally fine. I think that the director thing is a little – that's a power dynamic that I think is – little gray area, I'd
for
say.
For sure. For yeah. sure. Yeah. Some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, Sissy Spacek – also nominated for the Oscar for this performance.
Yeah.
She was originally an outside pick. In fact, Brian De Palma really did not want her to even audition. So she sort of called Brian De Palma and, you know, in sort of a power move was like, I have a commercial that I can do tomorrow for $10,000 or I can audition for you. Just tell me which one I should take. And he was like, well, go do the commercial.
Oh, wow.
And he actually, I think originally that she was coming in to do like set dressing on the movie because she was married to the art director, Jack Fisk. Mm. And she did do set dressing on several films with him.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, even though she was already an established actress. But
yeah.
So she apparently showed up to the audition with like Vaseline in her hair. And in this sailor's outfit that her mom had sewed her.
Okay.
And she got the part.
Ahoy. That's very weird.
Yeah. But, you know, she did what she had to do to make an impression.
Yeah.
And then during the filming of the movie, she made herself very isolated from the rest of the cast.
Right.
And basically, like...
Oh, she went method.
She went very method in order to sort of get the social inabilities of Carrie.
Sure, yeah. Or she could act. I don't know.
That's part of acting, Blaine.
I hate method so much.
It's, you know, it gets the job done sometimes.
Yeah,
I've been methoding
enough.
This podcast for 7 years.
You didn't get the part, Rob. So, yeah.
Here, let me put some Vaseline in my hair.
Done. You're hired. Now, please get that Vaseline out of your hair.
But she was very committed to her role. In fact, she even insisted on doing the hand that rises out of the ground and grabs Sue at
wow.
the end.
And she's like, bury me alive, guys.
Get yeah. it. And so they did. And in fact, you know, Brian De Palma made her husband bury her so that he wouldn't get any blowback, I guess.
Yeah.
And she did it. You
wow.
know?
That's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
Good for her.
You saw like some, you know, dude's hairy old hand being like, oh, I'm Gary now.
Had to shave his hand off in the shower.
Yeah.
Yeah. No bumps that way.
Yeah. But it was a huge success.
Yeah, I mean...
Martin Scorsese apparently saw it 3 times.
Yeah.
So, hates comic book movies, loves Stephen King movies.
Yeah, I mean, I can see Brian De Palma in this. Like, the first, you know, like, later Brian De Palma movies I can see in this. Like, it's
right.
just such a solid effort. Like, I mean, it succeeds. It's not even just an effort. But, like, it's... It's solid through and through. There's some weird stuff like that orphan scene we were talking about, but
yeah.
the amount of confidence in the slow pace of the movie is just a beautiful.
Well, he'd done a lot of movies already, but his like early stuff was like almost experimental.
Yeah.
And like there's a lot more of the like split scene stuff and
yeah.
you know, stuff that is very like what we would call like film student-y.
You're right. Yeah, exactly.
But this was like his first really, I think, mature film. Like this was him trying to make a movie that felt like a Hollywood movie, and it shows in a lot of ways. I don't think that it was expected to be the success that it was. But there was like, you know, this was a very much an era of serious filmmakers making serious horror movies.
I understand what you're saying because it's not the 80s where horror took a turn into comedy.
Yeah.
It was – yeah. And this is like mainstream horror where horrific things don't really happen for a long while in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely also plays it like it's not a horror movie for parts of it. Like,
yeah.
Like the parts of the high school people fucking around, it feels very like – yeah, like American Graffiti or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it combines the genre aspects that are required with like the other sort of more cinematic aspects.
And we know something's coming. Like we know that she has this power. Like there are breadcrumbs throughout this movie that keep us on the edge of our seat because there's a promise to this premise that they really fulfill at the end.
Yeah. And yeah, like when it does sort of happen, when she finally like unleashes her powers, it kind of feels good.
Yeah.
Like you're like, yes, but also kind of like, no.
Yeah, because you've been told to wait every time. It's like the ashtray fell off. What's she going to do? Is she going to kill us? No, wait, you know. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the movie, it's like, okay, you don't have to wait anymore. She's going to fuck everything up.
Yeah. And this movie, it's been redone a few times. Did you see the 2013 remake?
Only the trailer.
Only the trailer.
Yeah, that was enough, I think.
There was also a remake for television, which was supposed to dovetail into a series.
Oh,
yeah.
Carrie High.
No, she was supposed to like the TV movie had all the events of Carrie. And then after she murders her classmates, she goes on the run and sort of does good deeds like the Hulk or the Incredible
Hobo. No, it's like the Pretender. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's awful. It should have just been like Buffy where she just goes to a new school and you're like, oh, she's going to fuck up shit at this school too.
Yeah.
That's horrific. That's so funny.
Yeah. But like, the bad response to the TV movie nixed the series coming together. And there was also –
she just like joins a moving company. Like heats an orphanage. Like we don't have to spend any money on heating oil. Carrie just makes these fires for us.
You're thinking of Firestarter again.
I probably am.
She doesn't actually make the fire. She like, you know, water and the electricity cause things to catch fire. Get your King right.
Okay.
But there was also, we should mention – The Rage, Carrie 2.
Right.
Which was the attempt to sort of bring the Carrie mythos into the teenage 90s horror teen vibe.
Right.
And it actually featured the Amy Irving, who plays Sue. Her character continues on as the sole survivor of the massacre.
Crazy.
Yeah, and sort of mentors the new girl who has the Carrie powers.
Oh.
And I think it was like moderately well received.
Right.
But also pretty forgettable.
Yeah.
And
I certainly forgot it.
And then, of course, yes, the 2013 remake, which was directed by Kimberly Pierce, who previously directed Boys Don't Cry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, good hands, Chloe Grace Moretz, good actor.
Maybe I shouldn't just shunt it off to the side. Maybe I should actually.
It also wasn't really well received.
Okay, yeah.
But the one piece of trivia that I did like about it was that apparently the dude who plays the John Travolta character, when they go to the pig farm to kill the pig, he did this actor thing of kissing the hammer, not knowing that that hammer had pig feces on it.
Oh, God.
And he got very sick. Just a PSA, folks.
That's all, folks. Oh, man.
And then finally, Blaine.
Yeah.
Like, tell me you'd heard of this, the notorious Carrie musical.
I had not heard.
Oh, man. I think it was written by the same guy who did the screenplay for this, who I think his name is Lawrence Cohen. But it was notoriously bad and like a huge bomb. And there's like clips of it available on the internet. So maybe I'll try to link one up on Twitter or something like that. But it was so bad that it closed in only 4 days.
That sucks. It takes millions and millions of dollars to put up a show.
Yeah.
Falls in 4 days.
Yeah. And it became like a shorthand for this is a terrible musical. Like,
wow.
There was a book somebody put out that was called Worse Than Carrie, The Worst of Broadway.
Spider-Man Speed the Dark was in there.
Well, I think Spider-Man maybe, you know, took the title from Carrie.
Right.
You know, for biggest Broadway fiasco.
Yeah.
But for a long time, it was Carrie. However, it was revived again with some success. There was a off-Broadway production that did it with a drag queen as Carrie.
Yes. I'm watching so much RuPaul's right now. That's perfect.
And people loved it.
Of course, because drag queens are amazing.
What's your drag persona?
Johnny always used to call me Plain Daughters because it rhymed with Plain Waters. And he was like, that should be your drag name. So
wow.
I would just be like, I guess, you know, very Amish as a drag queen. It would not be well received either. It would be the Carrie of drag. It would be
bad.
Wow.
The musical, not the movie.
Yeah, not the movie. Okay. Yeah, I think that would be so great. There's also the thing of the, you know, throwing spoons at the screen when you're watching The Room, you know? We love bad things right now.
We
like,
do.
Bring back Carrie the Musical. It should be put on at, like, The Lot or whatever in Toronto or, like, off Broadway. People would go to that. They'd flock to that.
With drag queens.
You got to have drag queens.
It's not going to work with normal, normal casting.
No, you can't just go traditional. You have to think forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's Carrie. So, Blaine, you hadn't seen this movie before. What did you think of it?
Loved it. I love this movie.
Do you?
Yeah, it was so great.
Wow.
I there was weirdnesses to uh-huh. it, like the whole
weirdnesses.
Yeah, I mean uncomfortabilities that De Palma put in it, but I fucking loved it. I loved the pacing of that final scene, the wee wee wee, like the sirens.
Sound cues from Psycho?
No, but like there were sirens going off, you know, not only just violins, like the violins bled into these sirens that were so big. I loved that there was at least one good person potentially maybe in this movie.
Right.
That the violence was indiscriminate. Everything was really great. And I think there's so many movies that stand on the shoulders of Carrie that I didn't realize.
Right, for sure.
Even I just saw Brightburn, which wasn't a great movie by any stretch of the imagination. But there's this one scene where the mother takes the knife and is going to stab the kid in the back while hugging
him. Again with the knife raising. It's not a reference.
Yeah, it's just straight from Psycho. And I think that, like, you know, that was probably the best part of that movie, and it was from Carrie, you know?
Right.
So I think that this movie built a lot of Hollywood cinema on top of itself, you know? And Carrie keeps on reaching up into other movies from the grave to show itself.
For sure.
Yeah. What about you? Did you think it was rewatchable?
I did, but I also found it a bit clunky in parts. Mm. I didn't love all of the extraneous teenager scenes.
Yeah.
Though I like that funky little synth line that they play. It's like, we're having fun now.
Yeah.
Forget about the horror for a second.
Yeah.
All of that stuff I don't think really works in the movie, like trying to make it Animal House or something like that.
Yeah, because it takes away from the actual theme that they're exploring, which is the fucked up sexuality of coming into your own as a woman.
Yeah.
Which we know all about.
We're experts.
Glad we didn't have a guest on this podcast, you know?
No, no. But, yeah, I thought it was definitely I think it's a classic movie, and, yeah, cinema does owe a lot to it. There are some parts that are clunky. I think you have to sort of love it as it is. I don't find, like, the characters connect much to reality in a strange way.
Mm.
I,
Yeah, no, they're in a film world for sure. They're in like the Hollywood film world of we're going to say stuff that doesn't no one really says at all. And we're going to be over the top in everything, in every emotion we have. And
yeah, but I think it's like a classic film. I think the performances are great. And some of the scenes are so iconic, like that, like the blood-drenched Carrie standing on the stage in her prom dress.
Yeah.
I can't get that out of my skull.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever see the, like, Maybe Mine's performance of A Doll's House?
Oh, my God. Are we going to talk about theater?
Yeah. Just for one, the coda, if you can – you don't have to listen to the rest of this, but Rob and I are going to talk about this play because it was phenomenal.
So The Dollhouse, of course, is Ibsen's classic play, which has the door slam heard around the world as Nora leaves her husband at a time when that was just not an option.
Why don't we have a theater podcast? This is hilarious.
Theater's boring.
Yeah, no one wants to talk about theater.
But then they had the Mabu Mines Dollhouse, which was done with all the men as little people.
Yeah.
And the set was also sort of designed for them. And the women were very tall, Scandinavian type women. And it was supposed to represent metaphorically like what it's like being a woman.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage was in the original cast.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. He's so good. I fucking loved that performance.
I almost left at intermission because I hated the first act so much. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it one more chance.
Oh, that ending, man. And the ending, I'm going to spoil it for you. You can't see the play. It was done so well. The backdrop falls down and like all these puppets of Nora and Torvald, the married couple, are like – in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just stories of puppets.
It's so good. And she's like way up there singing opera.
Yeah. And she feels so naked that she literally has cried her fake eyelashes off.
Uh-huh.
She's taken her wig off and she strips down on the stage in the front of the stage to like represent how much of nothing she has, which is everything of nothing, right before she leaves Torvald. And it felt like that was a little bit of Carrie. There was a little bit of Carrie
right.
in there with the pig's blood and then the guy getting hit by the pail. And he falls on her and strips her of her dress.
Right.
So she's only wearing the slip underneath. And it's just like everything she built up and everything she owned that was hers is like stripped off her in that final moment.
Yeah.
And it just felt so real and effective, just like the play did, where I was like – tearing up watching this woman like say
so
her
good.
Final monologue.
I loved it so much.
Yeah. And now everyone's pulling off wigs in movies because of that to like get the Oscar. But like that was one of the most effective plays I've ever seen. And just at the end she leaves and all the puppets that were her, they're like fall off their strings.
Yeah.
Oh, it's perfect.
It's perfect.
Anyway, Carrie was really good too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great movie, and I think Carrie's a great character, and you know, I think the movie does a lot that you know was difficult to do in 1976.
Yeah,
and it's you know it's fantastic.
Yeah, if they could just pull back on one of the slaps, just one of the slaps,
and
in this
some
movie.
Of the voyeuristic camera work, some of the nudity.
Yeah, yeah,
that would be great.
Slaps of voyeurism.
That's Rewatchability for this week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. That's where you subscribe to this thing. And if you don't, we'll get very angry.
Rob, calm down. Calm down. They're all going to subscribe to you.
You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you want to suggest a movie for us to cover, you can do it there or also at rewatchability@gmail.com or on our website. Rewatchability.com. There's a SpeakPipe dealy there. Mm-hmm. You can also buy t-shirts from TeePublic.
Yeah. And if you have some friends that like listen to podcasts and you're not a Carrie out there or you want to make friends, tell them about this podcast.
That's how to make friends. There's somebody that, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
You just be like, hey, do you listen to podcasts? Because I know one podcast.
Please don't listen to us. We're just like getting people that are bullied more right now. This is horrible.
We're sorry. But you can listen to us when you're shoved into your locker.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.